Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry, where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today is the second show in our winter series, talking with Unity ministers and discussing their spiritual journeys, their passions, and their insights into the Unity movement and the way it's going. Last week we had Reverend Patricia Bass. And that was a wonderful show. I'm looking forward to today's show because today I have Reverend Philip Pearson on the show, a true legend and luminary in the Unity movement. He's been a minister for well over 50 years and co-ministered churches with his beloved wife Dorothy in Honolulu, Hawaii and Sacramento, California for 20 years. They co-hosted the groundbreaking TV show, The Best Is Yet to Be. Phil was president of the Association of Unity Churches back in the 60s, and he's taught at Unity Institute as well as doing all manner of things for the movement. He's also a writer and has written books about Buckminster Fuller, who he knew personally, and a recent book, I believe, about the 12 power system that was created and developed by Charles Fillmore. So it's a joy to welcome Phil Pearson to today's show. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be with you.
So, you know, we've been we had one of these series back in the fall, and I had Howard Caesar and Robert Brummett and some other folks on. And it was fascinating talking to people about their spiritual backgrounds, you know, how they found Unity, all the areas that they'd explored before Unity, perhaps, or not, you know. And so I thought, oh, let's do this again. And I thought, I bet you've got some wonderful insights. So how did you grow up? Did you grow up in a religious background, religious family?
Well, I could say that I did because my mother was quite spiritual. And as a youngster, I went to a Christian Science church. We lived right across the street from it in Kansas City. But I didn't register because I was quite young. So I won a scholarship to a wonderful prep school in Rhode Island. And it was an Episcopal school. And so I became very involved in the Episcopal church and stayed with that until my late 20s. And then I started my search for another kind of ministry. Kind of ministry, another kind of church.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I grew up Church of England myself, which is Episcopalian, in Britain. And, you know,
I was an acolyte, were you?
Were you? Yeah, no, I was never an acolyte. I had an allergy to a lot of what was going on in the Church of England, you know, because I didn't find it very relevant to everyday life, you know, and I was searching for something that was relevant. But I remember back in those days, we had religious services in school, you know, before you couldn't do that in state schools. And a lot of my religious upbringing and my love of scripture and hymns came from that that time in the morning, and you know, the assembly before the school started. And now, of course, I look back on my Church of England and think, oh yeah, I can understand it a little better because I think I'm looking through it through the lens of unity, and I'm beginning to penetrate a little deeper into what they were talking about. At the time, it seemed very alien and abstruse.
Yeah. Well, I frankly was quite at home in the Episcopal Church until I went through a divorce. And in that process of trying to sort my life out, I began to read the Bible seriously myself.
Right.
I had taken Bible classes as the Episcopalian shared them. But as I started to read it myself seriously, I began to think, you know, I think this man Jesus is trying to tell us that we are like him, that we have the same potentials that he has. And I found that so incredibly transforming in my thought that I decided right then that I no longer wanted to stay in the oil business, which I was in, and that I wanted to go into the ministry to share what I thought was a very unique insight about Jesus, because I didn't know anything about metaphysics or any of the metaphysical movements at that time. I thought I had really discovered something.
Interesting. And that's the beauty, isn't it? Many people come to Unity and say, you know, oh, I feel I've come home. I think because they find that it resonates with their core understanding. You know, that basically, to me, Unity is one of the ways universal truth is presented. You know, it's presenting in many religions, many traditions. But we all have this, I think, within us. You know, we have this sense of, There's a commonality, there's a oneness, there's a connectedness, and when we find a movement that actually espouses that and teaches that, it's like, oh my goodness, you know, this feels so right. So what was your first Unity church then?
Well, I never did touch a Unity church, actually. I looked for 3 years. I went to various seminaries and talked to some luminaries in various religious groups. But I never really resonated with anyone until I was staying in the town that I was born in, which I'd never been there since I was born there as a little child. And I happened to see that they were having a class where I was staying in a Unity class. And I thought, you know, I think that's that little book that my mother reads. I had never read it, but I had seen the word Unity on this magazine, so I thought, I'll go to that class. So I went to the class that night, and a very lovely elderly lady by the name of Edna Titus, who was the minister in Cambridge, Mass., and she was having a class there in Beverly, Mass. And so anyway, I went to the class. After the class, I just shook her hand and thanked her very much, and left. We didn't exchange any other words. And the next week, I made a real point of being back there again because I had been impressed with this lady's ideas and especially her meditation. And so when I came into the classroom, there was a man there, and he introduced himself and said that he was Edna Titus' husband and a licensed Unity teacher, and that he'd be doing the class. And I said, fine. I went over and sat down. And after a couple minutes, he came up to me and he said, were you the young man that was here last week? And I said, well, yeah, because most of them were older, so I knew he was talking about me. And he said, well, if you were here last week, my wife and my wife told me that if you came back tonight, I was to give you this. And he handed me a pamphlet. And I looked at the pamphlet and it said, How to Become a Unity Minister.
Wow.
And I was sort of blown away because I had, at that point in time, given up the thought of finding a ministry I could resonate with and was back in business. I was manager for Standard & Poor's Corporation. So anyway, I looked at that pamphlet and I thought, well, I like what this lady's saying. So in about 3 weeks, I flew out to Unity Village, and that was the beginning of my work in Unity.
That's quite a story, isn't it? My goodness. I don't think it would... Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, it follows a pattern that I've found all through my life, and that is that when you try to stay attuned to spirit, you don't have to make things happen. They come to you when the timing is right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? Yeah, I love that. And I think we've lost that somehow along the line, you know, because we struggle so much for things, and we had a show on that. Actually, there's another one coming up about that very subject, you know, the idea of time and eternity, and the ever-present reality is always here, and yet we put it off, you know, on a longer timeline, and sometimes we miss opportunities because we're so focused on the timeline, we forget the immediate presence of spirit is always available, and that's a great story to that effect. Unity was a little bit simpler back then, wasn't it? This was, I guess, the 50s, early 60s, was it?
Well, it very definitely was. That was in the 50s when I went back to the school. And I think, Paul, it isn't just a matter of the timing. It's the consciousness of trying to make things happen in contrast to letting things happen.
Yes. And
my experience has been, if you stay tuned in to the spirit and expectant of guidance and goodness, then doors just open for you, and you just keep walking through them. And life becomes, as I have found my life to be, a marvelous, marvelous process of creativity and joy and success.
Absolutely. Well, you've been very successful, and you've inspired many other people, I think, over the years because of that that consciousness. And I think some people say, I wish I had that. You know, it seems so easy for them. You know, why are they always seem to be succeeding? Why have I got such a struggle? But I think you're absolutely right. The key here is to trust that flow, isn't it? To be part of it and enjoy the ride. You know, enjoy whatever it takes you.
Yeah, Paul, I think it comes from an active participation, however, of keeping contact with the spirit. And I think that's why Jesus gave us that word to love God with all your heart and soul and mind and your neighbors yourself. But the first part is to love God with all your heart and soul and mind. And so that means you got to constantly be thinking at the center of your life that you have a God presence that is there for you, and it isn't just a matter of having lip service. You got to really believe it. And if you believe it, then it's fabulous how this spirit is constantly opening doors for you.
Yes.
Let me just tell you one thing that follows up on that amongst the many wonderful things we've had. But people often ask me, I remember Eric Butterworth, when I told him that we were on one of the largest independent stations in the country, he thought we were on one of the local programs, you know. When I told him, he said, how you do that? And I said, well, I didn't really do it. It happened to us. And it happened because Connie Haynes, who was a big band singer with Tommy Dorsey and Frank Sinatra, and she sang in the White House three different times, three different presidents. And anyway, she went through the Unity Ministry training, and when she finished, she came to Dorothy and me and asked if she could come and be our associate. And so we took her, we thought about it because we already had the associates, but we thought, well, let's do it. So she came with us, and we let her develop a Sunday night ministry where she did some wonderful things. But anyway, eventually we were invited to be on television locally, and it just went from there. And so we grew into television programs on the West Coast, and we're reaching about 100,000 people on a Sunday.
Wow! Wow!
So my point in telling that long story is, we didn't make it happen. We didn't say, now let's see how we're going to get on television. But rather, we let it happen to us. It was just remarkable.
Absolutely. And of course, you were very beloved, both of you, weren't you, as a team. What an amazing team you were, because I think there was a wonderful contrast between you. It's a bit like Charles and Myrtle, you know, the same kind of balance of energy. How did you meet Dorothy then?
Well, Paul, that's another one of those stories. The first woman I met when I went to Yundi Village to check it out to see whether I liked it or not was Dorothy. I had dessert at her house that very first night, but she was married, of course, to Don O'Connor. And then years later, after I completed my training, Don wrote me and asked me if I'd come and be an associate with him. And without getting into many more details, after a few years, Don and Dorothy got divorced. And then I asked Dorothy to join me in Hawaii. And that was we had 50 years of marriage together. And as you say, we had a lot of fun working together.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So you had two main ministries, didn't you? The one, like you said, in Hawaii, and then the big one in Sacramento.
Right.
Just tell us the contrast between those two, because the different cultures, how did that work? What did you notice the biggest differences there between ministering on the islands and then in California?
Well, of course, life in Hawaii is different, but as far as the ministering aspect went, it was quite the same. We probably evolved some of the Hawaiiana into our services that you wouldn't find on the mainland, but essentially it was the same. We loved Hawaii so much we swore together we'd never leave Hawaii. But again, I was asked by Bob Sicking, who was then the executive director of the Church Association of Unity Churches. He asked me to go to Sacramento for 3 or 4 months to see if I could help them out, because they were having very major problems financially and otherwise. So anyway, I went for 3 or 4 months, and the next thing you know, I got this awful sense that I really needed to be there, because it was a significant ministry and need a lot of help. So anyway, I remember calling Dorothy and thinking, boy, she's not going to be happy when I tell her I feel like we ought to move to Sacramento. And bless her heart, I said, I've got something to tell you. And her immediate response was, I know what you're going to tell me. We're leaving, aren't we? And I said, well, I'm getting that feeling. And she said, I was standing at the sink just a few minutes ago, and I heard that a voice that said, the woods are dark and deep, but I have miles to go before I sleep. And those are wonderful words by Robert Frost, you know, from his poem,
yes.
Stopping by the Woods on a Winter Evening. In any event, she knew that it was saying that we can't stay in Hawaii. We had other things to do. And,
right.
Of course, if we'd stayed in Hawaii, we probably would never have been on television. And so it, again, was something happening to us that brought forth a greater good in our lives and hopefully in the lives of many other people.
Right. Yeah, wonderful stuff. You know, when I first came into Unity, it was in the little study groups in Britain and just a few handful of people, basically. And I remember coming to the States for the first time and going to some of the ministries and getting to know some of the folks of your, you know, generation. And I must admit, there was this sort of magical feeling. It's a sort of a wonder, you know, that all is well. I remember, I guess Eric Butterworth and a man named Jack Graff was, if you remember him, he went to Jack Boland's church initially, and then he headed out on his own. But it's like the idea of all possibility, you know. It's a wonderful world. You can relax into it and enjoy. And I think sometimes In our, I don't know what, I'm not going to criticize the current state of Unity because there's still some wonderful things in it. But I think sometimes we miss the forest for the trees sometimes, you know. And I love my first experience was this larger, expansive view of things. And I hope we can get back to that, because that truly is inspiring, I think. And it builds churches and it transforms people's lives. And I know, you know, you've done many, many transformations over the period of time you've been in ministry. A couple of questions about ministry. I was always told, you know, if you could do anything else, don't go into ministry. You know, if you think you're good at something else, please don't do it, because it'll be the worst thing you've ever done, but also perhaps the best thing you've ever done. So those are my questions. Ministry, you've got more experience than most of us. What's the highest and the lowest things that have befallen you in ministry?
Well, Paul, it's difficult to say that it's been many low points, because in all honesty, it's been a pure joy for me, and that's why I'm still have been conducting the ministry, because I enjoy it so much, and it's so fulfilling. As you may not know, I started a ministry here in Sacramento again, so I had it for a year, and we've done very well. And I just retired from that again to go back to Unity Village, which you perhaps know.
Yes.
I'm going to continue to minister there in whatever way the doors are open for me. But it's just because I have always loved the ministry, and it's unfolded so easily and so wonderfully for me that I can't say that I have in any way regretted being a minister. However, I think what you started with is very true. I think it's been successful for me because my preparation in life and my soul's journey has really made it easy for me to be a minister. But if you just think I'll go into the ministry because it looks like a nice thing to do, that's the wrong reason, because it can be extremely difficult if you don't match the calling.
Very good. Very good point. And thank you for that classic metaphysical answer, too, because I knew probably you were going to say, no, it's all been good, because that's the way you choose to approach life, you know, which is wonderful and expansive and breath of fresh air, actually. So it's wonderful to hear that optimism right now, especially in our somewhat crazy world that we're in. Folks, we're at the break. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, Paul, I appreciate your thought about bringing the Spirit back into our work. And I have a wonderful word that I love. I look with wonder at that which is before me. Miracle follows miracle, and wonders never cease.
Wonders never cease. Amen. Amen. That's a good way to take the break. We're going to listen to these messages from Unity. I'll be right back with Phil Pearson, who'll inspire us some more in the second segment. Join us in a couple of minutes.
Unity Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
In his new book, What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug?, Daryl Fusaro emphasizes the positive effects of applying Unity principles in everyday situations. Laura Harvey, editor of Daily Word magazine, exclaims, "Daryl Fusaro shares his life lessons with inspiring creativity. This book is encouraging, funny, and heartwarming, a combination I highly recommend." As co-host of Unity Online Radio's Funniest Thing with Daryl and Ed, Daryl's old-school charm and no-nonsense approach to spirituality keep a global audience laughing and inspired. What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug? Is loaded with Daryl's hilarious, award-winning illustrations and packs his wit and wisdom into easy-to-digest, bite-sized stories of how he transforms chaos into tranquility and succeeds in the entertainment business by doing the opposite of everyone else. What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug is a pocket Bible encouraging the talented and timid to trust their gut, act on their intuition, and step out boldly. Even if you just bought it for the chapter titles and Daryl Fusaro's illustrations alone, you'd be getting more than your money's worth with this book. Author and film critic Sister Rose Pucati says, spending time with Fusaro's stories will leave you no choice but to smile and carry on. Oh, he forgot to mention he hangs out with a group of nuns, but then, if he had, it would have necessitated a change to some of his more colorful adjectives. Have fun ordering your copy of What If Godzilla Just Wanted a Hug today on Amazon.com.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. Yeah, check out my blog today on my website. I'm just talking about connectedness and a poem I wrote on that subject. I'm also going to post it on my Facebook. So have a look. Take a look at pauljohnroach.com. I'm with Phil Pearson, and we're talking about his long and legendary journey in unity and all the wonderful things that he's provided for so many people over the years, and the exuberance and positivity of it all, which, as I was sharing in the first segment, is what really impacted me when I first came to the States and saw what unity was compared to the little study groups that we had in Britain. They were wonderful too, but there's something about a large church teaching these messages of possibility and hope that just knocks your socks off. At least it did mine. So, Phil, you came from the Episcopal Church into unity. Have you been interested in other paths or endeavors, or have you stayed pretty much classic unity metaphysics?
Well, for my main focus in my ministry, I've stayed quite close to the unity philosophy, but I've always woven in the thoughts of many different Eastern mystics because they're totally compatible with the unity work. But I think the greatest outside material that I have brought into my ministry has been the work that's been going on in science for many years now. I think most people, if you'd say, what do they remember about Phil Pearson's ministry, it would be that I have had a great love and appreciation for the advancements in science, anywhere from evolution to the concepts of the latest work in physics, which is quantum mechanics. And I find that in all this breakthroughs in science, that there are relationships to the workings of the principles that we espouse in unity. And so that's why somebody like Teilhard de Chardin, the great Jesuit priest who gave us his theory of evolution and the phenomenon of man, was so important to me and continues to be. And I've woven that into my book, the 12 Freedoms. So in any event, I very definitely have woven other things into the central thought of the unity principles.
And of course, Charles Fillmore himself was very interested in science, wasn't he? In many of his books, he quoted the latest scientists of his day, you know, and early discoveries in quantum physics. And it is fascinating, isn't it, to see the teachings of the mystics, the teachings of unity, corroborated now by scientific endeavor. And some people think, oh, science is in opposition to religion, but really it's not, I don't think. It's complementary, isn't it? It's different ways of approaching truth, you know, one from a more rational scientific point of view and the other from a more intuitive point of view, but really they complement each other, I think.
Absolutely, Paul. Absolutely. I agree with you. I've always felt a kinship with Charles from that standpoint, that I know, as you said, that he was very interested in science. Some of his remarks about science seem rather funny today, but I think some of my remarks someday will seem funny to people too, because science is advancing so fast all the time. But I think bringing us closer, as you said, to an affirmation of the principles that we teach in unity.
Well, you know, he used to use the word ethers a lot, you know, which was a common term, I think, in metaphysical circles back in the turn of the 20th century, whatnot. But it went out of usage in science, but then it's come back, I think, you know, because the idea of this plasma field and the fluidity of everything and flow, sort of ether is now seen as a, you know, oh yeah, that makes sense again. So we only have to wait a while, really, for theories to come and go. But he was definitely onto something, wasn't he, in terms of the underlying substance and energy of the universe. You know, I think when I think of Fillmore, I think of three words: life, substance, and intelligence, because those are the wonderful words that he used over and over again, you know, to describe that, right, that trinity of creativity in the universe. So tell us a little bit about your latest book about the 12 powers there.
Well, I found so much that was compatible in 12 Fillmore's concepts of the 12 powers of man,
right,
that related to the work that Buckminster Fuller had done. And not everyone's as familiar with Buckminster Fuller as they are, say, Einstein. But Fuller was an equal to Einstein in terms of brilliance. I like to say that I think, from what I know of Einstein's life, that the only person that he ever asked to meet was Buckminster Fuller.
And is that so, right?
Yeah. Bucky gave us some marvelous insights about the basic element of the physical universe. And he said that the smallest form, if you crushed everything down to its smallest physical form, you would find that it forms a tetrahedron. And a tetrahedron has six vectors, but he said each of those vectors is actually two, because everything has an inside and an outside. And so as I read that, I realized what he's saying, that the most basic physical form of the universe has these 12 aspects to it. And I thought, how complementary to the concept that the invisible part of us, of consciousness, has this same, not consciousness, well, mind, actually, has the same aspect of 12 numbers. And he also pointed out, of course, as I said, there are six, but there are actually two, because it's inside and an outside. And so I formed the concept of the 12 faculties are actually are paired in dyads, so that you have faith and imagination, will and understanding, et cetera, et cetera. And so it was so compatible to Bucky's work that I sort of wove the two together in confirming how sound the unity concept, Fillmore's concept, is of the 12 powers. I think it's still unity's greatest gift to give to the world if we properly understand it.
Yes, yeah. Sometimes we have to wade through Charles Fillmore's ponderous prose. You know, he had these wonderful gems hidden in. Not to put the man down. He was a wonderful, great figure in our movement and in the world. But sometimes it's hard to penetrate. I know when I try and teach Fillmore's books at the ministry now, you know, people are so into sound bites and easy swallowed writing that they'll have a hard time, you know, dealing with some of his profound truths because of the way they're phrased. So it's wonderful that you're writing new books on these subjects, because I think anything that can make it more accessible is very valuable. So thank you for doing that. So you knew Buckminster Fuller quite well, I understand.
Well, I did know him real well, but I had the opportunity to spend some time with him interviewing him and his grandson, who's when I was writing the book, I was in touch with him and with Bucky's daughter. But the thing that I want to pick up on is what you said, that I think a lot of people don't pursue the 12 powers in great depth, because trying to read Charles Fillmore, as you said, is not easy. And it's just we have to take it and bring it up to date. And hopefully I've been able to do that to some degree.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm looking forward to reading that book. You know, I think Jim Gaither did a good job, too, because he put together a selection of what he called the essential Charles Fillmore, and with introductions and notes, etc., and made it a little more accessible. You know, so that there's been some work done by people to bring Charles, and I know Neil Varley and other people have worked as well in that area. In fact, Neil's going to be on my show in a couple of months talking about.
Oh, is he good?
Looking forward to that.
I want to say that I agree with you about Jim Gaither's work, too. That excellent, excellent piece of work.
Yes. Yeah, good. He's a good guy. As a side note, you know, our sanctuary is hexagon-shaped, and I've always felt a very spiritual feel in our sanctuary, and it's got great acoustics. But the fact it's a hexagon gives it a resonance, and I love that. And of course, it fits into what you're just talking about. You know, the geometry, sacred geometry, and architecture, sacred architecture, can influence our consciousness, can't it? I think if you know nothing about Buckminster Fuller, you know that he's, you know, the geodesic dome or whatever. You know, everybody links that to him.
Right.
But definitely, I think we are influenced by the spaces we're in, right?
Absolutely. That's what, isn't that called feng shui?
Yes.
Yep. An Eastern concept.
Mm-hmm. Right. And of course, it has many Western correlations too, you know, sacred geometry in the Western esoteric tradition, and the Greeks and others were, and of course, the great cathedral builders of the Middle Ages knew all about this. So, you know, walk into
Absolutely.
Any of their buildings, you have the same feel, you know, being a transcendent experience, and that's wonderful. And I think it's wonderful to be in a place that uplifts us. But I would also say that nature can do that too. You could be out in the sacred groves and forests or mountains, can't you, and feel that same sense of the sublime, if you like.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Paul. Well, I'm sorry I've not visited your church. It sounds most interesting.
Yeah. You ought to come down sometime.
Did you construct it?
It was already here when we moved in. We moved from another setting into this church in 2000. And that's one of the things that attracted us the most was the sanctuary. It's just a beautiful space. Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, you know, when we built the church in Hawaii, Dorothy and I had the privilege of building the church that's over there now. And
Right. We
always loved it because the sides all open. You know, they all fold back, so you're actually sitting outdoors during the service.
Yes.
And so where we hold our services is very important and very significant to the success of the services, I think.
I agree. Of course, you can do that in Hawaii, can't you? It's just a perfect
climate,
you know. Yeah.
That's right.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
I remember
yeah.
the church in Santa Barbara, too. It has windows all along the side of it. It's set up on a hill, and that has the same feel, I think. It allows the nature to penetrate into the space as well. It's got an inside-outside feel to it, and that's
right.
beautiful, too. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
I might add, Paul, I'm fortunate. I just came back from Hawaii 2 days ago, and I was over there at our old church and had the privilege of ordaining two new ministers when I was over there. So I still got a lot of Hawaiian around me as we're talking.
There we go. All right. That's part of the vibe I'm feeling there.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Unity today and where it's going. I think there's a number of initiatives that are exciting right now, aren't there? The new president, Jim Blake, he's a firecracker. He's going to take Unity World Headquarters places, I think. And the idea that Unity is linking with the Association of Unity Churches, you know, to move back into the educational building, be more connected, make one organization. Are you hopeful about the next stage for Unity's unfoldment?
Well, I really am, Paul. I had the privilege, you know, of working with Jim Blake when I was vice president back at the school. He was a vice president in charge of the IT department.
Yes, that's right.
And so we were very close, and it's because of my relationship to Jim that I am moving back there to be of whatever assistance I can be to him to sort of, in quotes, turning Unity into a new era of development. And
Yes. Like
you, I think Jim is a divinely appointed soul to lead us at this time because he's so sincere and so qualified. And I'm grateful that happened.
So, you know, there's many splits right now, you could say, fragmented things. It seems our world is a very fragmented place. You know, so much is them and us. We see it in political terms. We also see it in terms of countries in antagonism to others. But we also see it within our own movement, little splinter groups that set themselves up. And, of course, we are famous for being like herding cats in Unity, aren't we? Because we're all individualists. That's part of the reason we came into Unity, because we don't want to be the same as everybody else. There's that sense of I'm on my own journey. But how would you respond to those splits and those seeming people who are just dissatisfied with the leadership or whatnot? You know, some people never seem to be happy no matter what.
Well, I think you're right on when you say we are fairly unique souls in that we tend to be very individualistic as leaders in Unity. And I think the work as a movement flowed best when we had real strong leadership at the head of the movement, which, of course, was Charles and Myrtle. And immediate years after them, Rick and Lowell were very strong leaders, and people respected them. But as we began to fall away from that, it was a temptation for people to begin to think they knew more than headquarters how the whole movement should be run. And so we are a little splintered right now. But I think that as we allow spirit to work through what's going on in our headquarters again, that we can develop a consciousness that will be strong enough to begin to pull people back together again to realize that, like all organizations, we're stronger together than we are going our own little separate way.
Yes, yeah. And I, like I say, I'm encouraged to see that we have one, website now, unity.org, and that we're beginning this process of bringing the two organizations together, whether they are completely together or not, I don't think it's that crucial, but that they're sort of equal parts of a whole is important, rather than just totally different from each other. So, but I like what you're saying there. It's unpopular, isn't it, to talk about, a hierarchical structure with leaders and everything. We distrust leadership so much. And yet there is something to be said for clear and compassionate leadership, I think, that helps drive something forward. Because otherwise, there's no sense of us all being on this journey together. It can become too diverse, if you like.
Yeah. Well, I think that our work requires something more than most movements do, in that when you teach metaphysics, as we teach it, we teach almost a limitless potential for every soul. So if a leader is up giving that kind of message, they have to express a little better than at least the average person to warrant people saying, they must be onto something, because I can tell from the way they're living their life that it works,
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
So we need that in our leadership. And I'm thinking that we're going to be drawing that because that's what you find in the most successful ministers. I think that the leader has a way of impressing people who come to hear them and to meet them, that these people are, in quotes, above the average, which
yes.
Means the most important confirmation we can give to the principles. You can't teach incredible prosperity and be telling the people you're going broke all the time, and you can't be teaching that wholeness and health is possible and always talking about your health problems or manifesting that,
Right, exactly. Yeah.
In that sense, unity is a tough ministry. The traditional church is, as long as you were sweet and loving and kind, that was enough. That qualifies you. But to be a unity minister, you've got to be a little more than that to be qualified.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's also room to embrace, the darkness, the shadow side of things, the hurts and fears that we all have, right? That we are holistic beings, but not get lost in that. I think that sometimes we can get lost in all the analysis and all the discussion about the nuances of ourselves and forget there is this grand, abundant, providing presence that's within us and around us, and enjoy that and celebrate that, right? That is a hugely important thing. When all said and done, all is well, right? God is in charge.
That's right.
You're so right. We've got a few more minutes to before the end of the show. From all your experience, from all your knowledge and wisdom, what wisdom would you impart to us living our lives this particular time in our history? This show is going out on Valentine's Day, so we're talking about love, I guess, as being the paramount power and force. But what would you mm-hmm. say to people who don't feel love, or they're discouraged, they're overwhelmed, they listen to too much television, it bombards them with all kinds of information? What would be your advice to those folks?
To people who can't find love in their life, you mean?
Or anybody today, we're full of stress. We're rushing around with our heads cut off. What would you say? What could we do? What could be helpful?
Oh, Paul. Well, I think I touched on it earlier when I said that I think that the greatest purpose in life is to discover your at-one-ment with God, and you do that by pausing to realize how wondrous our universe and creation and life itself is, and to allow that to spark you to love that consciousness, the mind that has created all that is, and to build your day around that kind of feeling of the wonder of life and of the world you live in and people, and put your attention on the people who do radiate that rather than the people who don't, and to build this sense of oneness, which is love is the idea of atonement, to build this sense of oneness and love in your life in every way you can. And to do that opens doors for that kind of manifestation to come into your life of goodness and of love. You get what you give out. You get what you give out.
Yep, beautifully put. Thank you. You know, of all the people that I've talked to over the years that have been successful or are inspiring, they all have a commonality, and the commonality is that they have a passion, and they, as a result of that, they stay youthful. And talking to you today, I could be talking to a young man, you know, because you have that passion and apparent youthfulness, right? That it's nothing to do with a physical age, is it? You've maintained that sense of open wonder of existence and the possibilities of life. And I think that keeps us healthy, doesn't it? It keeps us inspired, and it definitely inspires others. So thank you for maintaining that consciousness yourself and bringing that that passion, because, you know, you could feel it throughout the whole show that you were a passionate person.
Well, I do. I have a passion for God, and a passion for the principles that we share in unity. And I bless you for recognizing that yourself, that passion about life is the key to success in every area. Yeah.
Yes. I often say to my congregants that, you know, it's not sin that's the problem, and we don't talk much about sin in unity anyway. It's complacency, you know, it's sort of blah, you know. We're complacent. Oh, well, maybe it'll happen, maybe it won't, you know, or I wait till my ship comes in, you know, or win the lottery or whatever. And that's anathema to our teaching, you know. It's to claim your good right now. It's yours to claim. Be passionate about it, you know.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Folks, I've been with talking with Phil Pearson. We'll say goodbye to him in a second. Well, next week we have Reverend Mark Fuss. Joining me, another great Unity minister, and can share his insights with us. So join us for that next week. But right now, I want to truly thank Reverend Philip Pearson for being with us. It's been a wonderful experience, Phil. You've inspired me today, and I hope you've inspired others.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate the privilege of being on your program. I know you're doing a great work.
All right. Thank you so much. And thanks for listening, folks. Have a good week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality. Only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Does music open your heart and bring you peace and joy? Experience the sacredness of sound with Ramdesh Kaur as we travel the world of mantra, kundalini yoga, and devotional music. Join us for a journey into spirit, Thursdays at 4 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Eastern on Spirit Voyage Radio with Ramdesh. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
The optimist sees the good in all things, builds upon the most hopeful and cheerful view of matters, and expects the best possible outcome. The pessimist, unwilling to look for the good, rarely finds it. Both optimism and pessimism are states of mind. They are attitudes, not events. The words we most often use reflect our strongly held thoughts and affect every area of our lives. If you're finding more frustration than fulfillment in your life, take a look at what you're thinking. Find something more positive to think, say, or do. Begin building a happier, more satisfying life for yourself today as you choose to look for and find the good in every person and circumstance. This Law of Life is brought to you by Unity.
To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Truly understand the laws of the universe and live a life based on these profound and unwavering truths, then your dream life starts today. No more waiting, no more wandering. If you're ready to let go of the striving and move into the allowing, you're ready for everyday attraction on Unity Online Radio. We study the teaching of Abraham given to us by beautiful Esther Hicks, so we can release confusion for clarity, exchange struggle for serenity, and have the time of our lives today. Join host Ray Zander every Friday at noon Central Time, 10 a.m. Pacific, on Unity Online Radio for Everyday Attraction, where the law of attraction gets real.
Have you ever considered that everything you think, say, and do is a prayer to the universe? What would your life be like if you activated the power of yes? Join Reverend Beverly Molander and her exciting guests on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, to find out how they activated the power of yes in their lives, their communities, or even the world. If they can do it, you can too. Listen to Beverly Molander and her guests live every Monday at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
In the midst of a hurricane, there is a center of stillness that remains intact despite the violent winds raging around it. This fact of Mother Nature points to a similar truth in human nature. Even as I encounter the inevitable storms of life, there remains within me a place of peace. Although I can't always control what happens around me, I can choose to stay centered in an awareness of who I am and how I respond. According to Gardner Hunting, peace is an atmosphere of the heart and has nothing to do with environment or circumstance. So when I'm caught up in a whirlwind of chaos and conflict, I turn within for better weather. Peace is always there. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Sometimes you feel so alone and overwhelmed, you don't know where to turn. These days, it seems like there is no end to our problems. We invite you to connect with Silent Unity, the 24-hour prayer ministry where someone is waiting to pray with you right now. Since 1890, Silent Unity has always been there. No judgment or dogma, just someone affirming the best for you. Call 816-969-2000 today. You can also connect online at unityprayervigil.org.